Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Before we get to the fun, here's a quick word from one of our sponsors.
So I first started having trouble sleeping when, I guess I was probably in my late 20s, and my boyfriend's sister at the time, who was my best friend, at 33 was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and she had four children under the age of 8 at the time, and that became a very stressful situation. I'm not a mother, but I have a little taste of what motherly and household and duties and stress of life can happen. And I think that's really when my sleep troubles started.
Life stressors, like what Leah just described, are at the root of most all sleep issues. And just like Leah, most people turn to pharmaceutical sleep aids for help.
So I would go back and forth between Ambien or even Xanax just to kind of take the edge off, or lorazepam. I had a friend that's a nurse practitioner, and she's like, oh, I take lorazepam every night. Try that. It's better than Ambien. And I know this sounds so horrible, and I can't even believe I'm talking about it. Like, honestly, because there was a time when I would just be mortified that anyone would know. But pretty much every night for 7, 8, 9 years.
Leah was able to stop using these sleep aids after finding Doc Parsley's sleep cocktail.
And of course, I was skeptical, as anybody who has really bad sleep issues and have been, you know, dependent on pharmaceutical grade products to help them sleep would be. And I started drinking the sleep cocktail every night, and it probably took, I don't know, 3 or 4 nights before it started working. And if you have trouble sleeping and something helps you sleep, especially if it's not bad for you, you want to keep doing that. So I have religiously taken that for probably 3 months, and it is unbelievable. I've told everybody I know, like, oh my gosh, you will not believe this stuff. It totally works. It would take me for, like, telling you about this. It's going to change your life. So now I sleep every night, like every single night I sleep.
Are you ready for a good night's sleep? Try Doc Parsley's sleep cocktail. Go to robwolf.com/sleepcocktail and use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.
Hey folks, Rob Wolf here, another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Super excited for today's guest. Dr. Amy Myers is one of the most highly regarded functional medicine practitioners in the world. She is the New York Times bestselling author of The Autoimmune Solution, and she is the author of the soon-to-be-released The Thyroid Connection. Doc, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super embarrassed because Dr. Myers did this podcast with me last week. This is the release week of her book, and somehow I screwed up the recording, and she was kind enough to let me do this again, and she didn't even curb stomp me or belittle me during this whole process. So thank you.
Not at all. Technology, you gotta love it or you gotta hate it.
Oh man, it affords us many incredible opportunities, but man, when we screw it up, which I screwed something up, it can cost us a lot of redundant time. So I'm really grateful that you're willing to come back on the show and do another episode.
I'm always happy to talk to you, Rob Wolf.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Now, Doc, you just have a really incredible background. You, from the Peace Corps to just actually going through medical school, shifting from standard medicine into functional medicine. You have a really fascinating personal health story. Could you flesh out some of your background to give folks some context about how you tackle medicine in your day-to-day practice, and then also clearly the way that you convey this information in your books?
Absolutely. So, you know, of course, my story is the first chapter of the book, so I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But yeah, I do have a pretty unique background. I grew up with parents who were somewhat hippies. We made homemade whole wheat bread and homemade yogurt and grew sprouts. And my parents jogged before anybody did. And my mom taught yoga. And I became a vegetarian at 14. After college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and but didn't know what I wanted to do fully. So I ended up joining the Peace Corps. And while I was there, I got really interested in natural health and came back to the States and thought, you know, I'm going to go to Bastyr out in Seattle and get a naturopathic medical degree. And then I actually moved out there and realized, you know what, I really want to get a medical, you know, like an MD degree, an allopathic medical degree. And I don't know why, I'm a person, I like options. I never like to be limited. And, you know, with a naturopathic degree, there's only a certain amount of states you can practice in. So I always like my options wide open. And so I went to medical school. And I was president of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Interest Group. I did all my electives in integrative medicine. And my second year of medical school, I started having insomnia and panic attacks and weight loss. And eventually I got this tremor, which is what caused me to find a doctor because I had been healthy and didn't even have a doctor. And when I got there, she really brushed off my symptoms and really just told me that I was a typical medical student, thinking I had everything I was learning in medical school, and completely dismissed me. And I thought, you know, I've survived the Peace Corps. My mother had passed away very unexpectedly the year before, and I just had never responded to stress this way. So I really stood there and demanded a full workup. And long story short, I eventually got diagnosed with Graves' disease, which is an overactive thyroid. And the conventional treatment for that is either to blow up your thyroid with iodine-131, like Hiroshima, cut it out, or to take pretty toxic medications. So I opted not to do anything at first, and then I tried Chinese medicine, ultimately did the medication, and ended up with toxic hepatitis, and then ultimately had my thyroid ablated. And again, I go into a lot more detail. I'm making it sound like, oh, this was just no big deal. This was a very, very traumatic time in my life that was a complete roller coaster that then, of course, left me hypothyroid and down that road of, you know, taking supplemental thyroid hormone. So I knew intuitively at the end of all this, I actually became an emergency medicine physician again in order to keep my options open in case I never found what I later found, which is functional medicine. And eventually took all the coursework through the Institute for Functional Medicine and eventually opened my own functional medicine clinic in Austin, Texas, and then wrote The Autoimmune Solution and now The Thyroid Connection. And, you know, even though conventional medicine really solved my problem of Graves' disease by blowing up my thyroid like Hiroshima, really didn't get down to the root cause of why I had it in the first place. And it really didn't, you know, basically find that root cause or kind of put me back together, so to speak, restore me to health, right? I mean, it took out the problem, but it didn't actually restore me to health. And so, of course, over the last, you know, 10 years, that's what I've been doing with people, working with people with all kinds of chronic illness, helping them reverse their autoimmunity, optimize their thyroid function. I mean, pretty much any type of chronic condition I work with people. And I tell people that I understand it from the patient perspective, thyroid that is, autoimmunity, both of them. From the patient perspective, I understand what it's like to be not heard by a doctor and dismissed. I understand it from the conventional perspective, you know, working in the emergency room for 5 years, and then now understanding it from a functional medicine perspective. So I feel like I get it from, you know, all three worlds.
Right. Well, I can attest to how good you are at this because I've talked to a lot of people who had worked with a number of folks, even in the kind of, you know, functional medicine, ancestral health scene, who weren't really able to get down to the root cause of what was going on until they worked with you. So you absolutely know what you're doing with this stuff. And it's just so impressive to see the work that you're carrying out. I know that people are usually more familiar with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. That seems to occur maybe a little bit more frequently than the Graves' disease does, but both of them are autoimmune in nature. Could you talk about what each of those are? And I just think it's so interesting that in one tissue, in one gland, we could have an autoimmune process that on the one hand creates a low thyroid state, and in the other process creates an accelerated or overactive thyroid state. I think that's just fascinating.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, people kind of ask me that as well. And I'll get into this about, you know, does the program differ in the book? Because, you know, it is a book for Hashimoto's or Graves or any type of thyroid condition. And yes, Hashimoto's happens much more frequently than Graves does. And there are lots of books out there specifically for Hashimoto's. But the fact that I had Graves, I certainly was not going to leave that out of a, you know, thyroid book. So really what's happening, and I think you hit the nail on the head, is that when we're talking about Graves or Hashimoto's, they're both autoimmune in nature. And in general, most thyroid conditions are autoimmune in nature. And what is happening is that the immune system is getting derailed, and then kind of how it manifests itself is in the thyroid. And, you know, there are certain, you know, with Hashimoto's, typically what's happening is inflammation is beginning in the thyroid, that, and whether that's from heavy metals, whether that's from gluten and molecular mimicry, whether that's from Epstein-Barr or herpes virus getting in and the immune system going to attack that and inadvertently attacking your cells. You know, that's what can happen, and it's this inflammatory state that starts in the with Hashimoto's that eventually causes the thyroid to have enough damage to where you get hypothyroid. I mean, some people can get a little hyper in the beginning just from that inflammation. And with the Graves' disease, what's happening is it's actually antibodies attacking the receptor that stimulates them and makes the body think, or that actually makes the thyroid overproduce the hormone. But really what's going on is a problem in the immune system. So in my book, I of course talk about what I think are the five main factors that disrupt someone's immune system and their thyroid, which is the diet we're eating, our leaky guts, toxins, infections, and stress. And then of course, with the thyroid specifically, also nutritional deficiencies, and we can get into those as well. But the program differs in the book when it comes to both Hashimoto's and Graves, because with Graves, things are very, we're burning through a lot of nutrients. And so one, there's, I have some thyroid calming herbs that I recommend to try to do in lieu of the medication, or of course, something more permanent like surgery or the ablation. And also I have some additional nutrients, like taking a particular fiber to help bind up the excess hormone, to take L-carnitine, CoQ10, things that we're really burning through when we're in that real hyper metabolic state that you can get into with Graves' disease.
Doc, let's definitely talk about some of the nutrient considerations, but on the initiation side of this, you mentioned like some molecular mimicry, some leaky gut, some possible heavy metal toxicity, viral infections. Do you have a sense of what is occurring more often in Graves versus Hashimoto's? Do you have any sense that, more frequently it's kind of Epstein-Barr that manifests into Graves, or Epstein-Barr plus leaky gut, or is it kind of a crapshoot? Is it just you've got a damage to the immune function, some sort of potential autoimmune process is kicking in, and then it may be up to genetics or just kind of random luck from there?
Well, I mean, there is, you know, for both of these conditions, a genetic component. We think about 25% is genetics and 75% is environmental factors. And, you know, really, I kind of like to think of these in a pie chart, you know, these five factors that I mentioned in a pie chart. And I could have five people in my office all coming with the same quote unquote condition, whether it be Hashimoto's or Graves. But for each of those, the primary piece of that pie could be very different. Now, what we do know is that there isn't anybody that I see that doesn't have, you know, issues with the diet, right? Gluten, again, because of that molecular mimicry, looks very similar to our thyroid tissue. So I definitely get everybody off of gluten. We know through the work of Alessio Fasano that leaky gut needs to be there, again, for autoimmunity. So there are commonalities, but then there can be some nuances. There are certain infections like SIBO, small bowel bacterial overgrowth, has been shown to be with Hashimoto's. And I mean, I do see it in a lot of people, but there isn't as big a link with Graves. Mm. Yersinia or Yersinia, there's definitely a link with both Graves and Hashimoto's, although it tends to be in the literature more linked to Graves. Toxoplasmosis, I tend to see more with Graves. But a lot of times, I mean, nobody comes in and it's like, oh, I just have SIBO, or I just have, you know, Yersinia or Yersinia, and that's the only thing wrong with me, and we've treated that and your Graves has gone away. I mean, like, I don't ever see that.
It never happens.
By the time they get to my office, it is never one thing. It is all five of them typically in varying degrees.
I don't want to ask too leading of a question here, but given that this stuff is multifactorial, there seem to be, so if we were to talk about this with your pie chart analogy, which is awesome, and different people will have different proportions of this pie allocated to either like infection load or types of infection or like environmental toxins or maybe life stressor or something like that. How does all this lend itself to the kind of standard reductionist model of research to try to get at the root cause of this?
Well, I mean, I think, as you know, when there is something that can be patented, it leads, you know, well to research. So right now everybody's racing to find the zonulin blocker, and I think they're in like phase two or three trials with that. So I think we'll all be hearing about leaky gut and its role in autoimmunity once somebody has a drug that they can sell for it. You know, I do think that there is, I mean, my book, actually, that my editor was kind of upset because I had so many scientific sites for research that I found in all of this. I mean, there is research, in some cases, not quite as much as other, but there is research to support everything that I'm talking about in the book. Sometimes the studies are small, sometimes, you know, yeah, I mean, that they're small and there's not as much funding for them. But, you know, when it comes to infections and things like that, I mean, people are always trying to find, you know, whether it's a antiviral or antifungal or antibiotic or something for these. So there is a fair amount of research out there for, you know, frankly, everything that I'm talking about in the book. In fact, I was being interviewed for the I think it was the New York Post or something yesterday, and it was very specific about thyroid and stress. And of course, I have a whole chapter on stress in the book, but I was, you know, just researching what was, you know, even anything that's come out since then, because, you know, you write a book and then it like comes out a year later. So like there's even more research. And there was, I think, two or three on, it was on anxiety and thyroid. And I think it was three papers that were published in August of 2016 that had just come out about just having antibodies to your thyroid, being in a euthyroid state, meaning that you didn't have actual dysfunction to where you needed to be on supplemental thyroid medication or hormone, but it just was showing the antibodies themselves were a risk factor for anxiety. And in some of the studies, we're talking about depression as well. And that is, yeah, just the inflammation, either the cytokines in the brain or, you know, the antibodies themselves creating inflammation in the brain.
Right. It's interesting to me. My sense is that the research, though, is somewhat parts and pieces, and that people are looking at this very small piece. Like, it's really unlikely that we're going to get like a good randomized control trial where we get this. What would be awesome is an outcome based deal where we find people with the problem, do whatever we need to do, and then show how efficacious it is at the end of it. But that is super messy compared to the way that they usually want to do science, where we control one single variable. And it seems like we're never really going to have a single variable that could be tweaked to get like this, like, definitive answer with this.
Yeah, you can't. And I mean, even, you know, what we call, one would call anecdotal evidence, but when you're doing it over, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of patients, and then hundreds, if not thousands of functional medicine doctors, you know, it's no longer anecdotal evidence about, you know, reversing autoimmune disease, right? I mean, I have helped many people reverse Graves' disease in my clinic, and, you know, they got off the medications that I was on. Their thyroid looks beautiful and they're not on any kind of medication and their antibodies went away. But you know what, by the time people get to me in my clinic, you know, we're doing so many things all at one time. I mean, so even in my clinic, one would love to say, okay, all we're going to do is change the diet first. And then after 3 months, we're going to fix your gut. And then after 3 months, we're going to do the heavy metals. And certainly I don't do everything at once. Like, I never chelate somebody the minute they walk in the door because they probably have a big leaky gut. But a lot of things are happening at one time, right? I mean, I'm changing their diet and I'm fixing their gut and I'm repleting nutrients all at one time, because people, you know, have already been to 10 doctors by the time they come. They've already been places and they're ready to get rocking and rolling. And when you're dealing with Graves, if it's not well controlled with the medication, I mean, they're going to have to do something pretty radical if we don't get it under control quickly. So unfortunately, even those of us practicing functional medicine can't even tell you anecdotally from our experience, because we're often doing so many things at one time. Now, I mean, off the subject, but I can tell you, I mean, a couple of things, but one, like rheumatoid arthritis patients, I have amazing results chelating heavy metals with them. Like mercury and rheumatoid arthritis, like it is very clear to me that those two are related. So it's difficult. We're starting to use the helmet therapy, the parasite therapy in my clinic. And, you know, just in talking to some other practitioners, it's been very clear, like, that can be super helpful for people. So there are things, I mean, there are people out there, low-dose naltrexone, that swear. I've used it in my clinic. I haven't had those success stories that people talk about. I wish I had. It doesn't mean that I don't use it for people. We definitely give it a try, but I haven't had any of those. So there are definitely some things out there that are real game changers, that it's very obvious that that was the thing. But for the most part, it's all much more subtle than that.
Gotcha. Ends up being a bit stickier than this is the one thing that we're going to do and this solves the whole problem.
Toxic mold's another one, getting somebody out of their environment. I mean, there are definitely Lyme and getting treatment for that. I mean, there are some biggies, but when it kind of comes to, like, you know, fixing the gut or diet, it becomes less obvious.
Gotcha.
And then honestly, the reason I wrote this book, you know, is in part to be a partnership with your doctor with the autoimmune solution. That was kind of like, hey, you know, forget Western medicine, just follow my program and work with the doctor to get off your meds, your immunosuppressive drugs. I mean, anybody who has a thyroid condition and is on supplemental thyroid hormone will tell you how crappy they feel if that is not optimized. So given that most people, or many of them, will be on supplemental thyroid hormone, they have to work with their doctor. I mean, you can change the diet and fix all this stuff, but if your thyroid isn't working and you need, like me, if I didn't take my supplemental thyroid hormone, I'd die. So if you know, somebody changed their diet and did all this amazing stuff, but they were on the wrong dose or the wrong form of supplemental thyroid hormone, they're still going to feel like crap. And likewise, you know, if you are on the right dose, but you're not dealing with the underlying causes, you're never going to have optimal health. So it's really, this book is much more of a partnership with your doctor than the other book was.
Gotcha. Doc, just to help people, like, if they're wondering if they or someone they know has a thyroid condition, could you talk about the differences between Hashimoto's and Graves? Like, there is some overlap, but clearly there are some clinical distinctions between the two.
Absolutely. So there is a lot of overlap. And so not everybody always fits neatly into one box or another. And I talk about that, of course, in the book as well. You can have some symptoms of one and, you know, some symptoms of another. But in general, you know, what I had was an overactive thyroid. And when things are overactive, then everything speeds up. So people tend to lose weight. They feel anxious. Me, I was even having panic attacks. They have insomnia. Their hair could be falling out. They tend to feel warmer, although I never did. I always felt cold still, probably from all the anxiety and, like, clamping down of my, you know, peripheral circulation.
Mm-hmm,
but they tend to maybe have their bowels sped up, so loose stools. Even with Graves, I mean, either one, you could have a goiter where you see the inflammation of the thyroid, increased tendon reflexes, increased temperature, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure potentially. And then in Graves, very specifically, there are antibodies that end up attacking the eye muscles. And so you can see that it's called exophthalmos, which is your eyes popping out, which is very classic Graves. Thank God I did not have that.
That's like the Don Knotts look.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
I had a very interesting stare. Or like in photos you can see, and I don't know if it's like, I just was like a deer in headlights because I was just like so anxious all the time. Luckily it did not get to my eye muscles. And then Hashimoto's, or low thyroid, is kind of, in most sense, people think of just the opposite. Things slow down. People can have depression, brain fog, slow mentation, feeling cold, gain weight, lower heart rate, decreased tendon reflexes, constipation, hair falling out, dry skin. Both of them can have infertility, irregular periods. Men can have low libido. I think, you know, those are kind of the main ones that I can, you know, think of.
Right. Amy, so clearly you have a strong nutritional component to this. The autoimmune protocol has been maybe the reason that this kind of paleo ancestral health approach didn't just go the way of, like, Atkins in the zone. Like, it seems to have some really legitimate sticking power and really seems to be making its way into the larger healthcare provider scene. What exactly are you doing on the nutritional approach is kind of my first question. And also, where do you see nutritional ketosis or MCT oils, you know, exogenous ketones? Do you find ketosis at all beneficial for autoimmune states, or do you use that as part of pruning back SIBO or something?
So those are all great questions. And, you know, people always ask, well, what's the difference? I call my dietary program the Myers way. And it's more than just diet. It's like the whole way of life. But people ask, well, you know, how is that different than an autoimmune paleo protocol? And in a very broad sense, it's very similar. It's not a whole lot different. I mean, if somebody just wants to follow that, that's fine. You know, what this is years of experience working with patients and sort of sorting out, you know, I think it's okay to have that herb, or, you know, to not have this or have that, just based on my clinical experience and what I've seen work. But for, you know, a general sense, it is very similar to an autoimmune paleo protocol. And in terms of the ketosis, I, in my clinic, can find that very helpful with people with things like seizure disorder. That's been super helpful. And a lot of neurologic conditions, MS, or things like, you know, neurodegenerative disorders can be very helpful. When it comes to just general autoimmunity and thyroid, you know, that's affecting a lot of women. And, you know, I just am not seeing, personally me, I tried to do super ketogenic one time, thought I was gonna, you know, like just lose it. I mean, literally, like my anxiety was out the roof. I'm so type A, I need carbs to like calm me down. I have found that, you know, because thyroid is typically affecting more women than men, and adrenal issues typically play a role in it, and it also is typically happening either around times of hormonal transition like postpartum or perimenopause or menopause, I find in my clinic that most people need the right balance of carbs. And then, yes, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of people in this condition also have SIBO or candida. And so, you know, it's really this like trying to fine tune it and finding the balance of like having enough carbs to support you, and support your adrenal glands and your hormonal state, but not too many that you're feeding these infections, you know, such as SIBO and candida. So our program is not low carb, but it's on the lower carb side than like a traditional, you know, like diet book would be, because most people have these conditions. And then when, you know, I have some quizzes in the book to test to see if you have candida or small bowel bacterial overgrowth, and we even have you dial back the carbs even more. But, you know, as with anything in functional medicine, it's really a personalized approach, and you got to figure out, you know, what's really working for you and, you know, what's not working for you. And when we're talking carbs, I mean, we're typically talking the things like, you know, spaghetti squash and butternut squash and sweet potatoes, things like that, you know, more root vegetable type carbs and carbs coming from veggies.
Gotcha. You know, I've been playing around a little bit with some lentils and kidney beans. Basically, the legumes are at the really, really low end of the kind of glycemic index, glycemic load scale. And I've actually been feeling reasonably good on those. Where do you see legumes fitting in? Like the challenge that I still have, and this gets off in the weeds, but I still find some challenge around glycemic control. I need to really pick my carbs pretty carefully, both the amounts and the types. Where do you see beans and legumes kind of playing out in that story?
So I think this is where it's really, you know, left up to an individual. And it sounds like, you know, you're having some blood sugar, you know, I don't want to say problems, but some, you know, issues, or you're fine tuning things.
Oh, it's definitely a problem. It's a pain in my ass. So yeah.
you're experimenting with that. So that's where it's individualized medicine. I mean, in the beginning, I do want people to give those up because of the potential irritation to the gut and the fact that most people are not, you know, soaking them and sprouting them and, you know, cooking the hell out of them. So I do have people give them up on the 28-day program. But then that's where you can really add things back in at the end and see what works for you. I mean, these are general guidelines based on, you know, what I've seen working in my clinic with literally thousands of people, now literally literally tens of thousands after people having read the autoimmune solution and getting feedback from them. So, you know, this is the foundation that I see works. And then, you know, we also, I have a part in the book that's like the Myers Way for Life, and it's about adding foods back in. I hope people continue to keep dairy and gluten out because of the molecular mimicry and just how inflammatory they are. But you can play around. I mean, for some people that I see, corn is far worse for them than gluten is, you know? I mean, it's just, there are people who, you know, eggs. I had a woman who had Graves' disease and was completely in remission and added eggs back in and nearly ended up in the hospital from getting super hyperthyroid from having like two eggs. So there is no one right answer. I think all of us in this world are making generalizations, right? And then that's where you just learn to listen to your body. You sense that something was going on with your blood sugar, so you're experimenting with other things. And so I don't think that it's like, no, you have autoimmune disease, you can never, never eat a bean again in your life. I think that it's figure it out and see what you can tolerate and what you can't tolerate and in what amounts you can tolerate that.
Right. Down the line. Totally makes sense. I mean, we have certain classes of foods, Greg's legumes and dairy, some nightshades that we have some really good argument that they probably have some immunogenic potential. And so pull those out, get as healthy as we can, and then start reintroducing those and see how you do with it. Like for myself, I get acne and joint pain from basically all cow dairy, with the exception of maybe some butter or some ghee. But I could eat goat or sheep dairy with, I mean, seriously reckless abandon and feel fine with it. And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, that's when, you know, when people are doing these tests, like these food sensitivity tests, you know, they also, it's like looking at one protein and it's like, you know, was it organic? Was it raw? Was it cooked? Was it fermented? You know, and every time you're doing that, it's changing the molecular structure. And therefore, it's going to change how you respond to it. And then, of course, sheep and goat look very similar to cow dairy. And for some people, it's so similar, it does not work. I can't do it. But other people can do it great. I mean, the reason I can't do it is because I eat a little bit of goat's cheese and I'm like, okay, well, that went well. Let me have that again tomorrow. Okay, that still went well. Let me have that again. Oh, that went so well, I'm going to have it twice today. And then I'm like, okay, that no longer went well.
Right.
Mine is, I could do it if I managed to do it like, you know, once a month, but I don't. I mean, it's like, I think you were where I saw that on Facebook, the 100% rule. Was that you that posted that thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Like I don't always read things that people post, but I actually was like, what is this? And I read it and I was like, it's perfect. Like, because when it comes to gluten and dairy, I'm 100%. I don't think twice about it. Somebody can put a cake in front of me and it doesn't even like register. Right. But you know, it's like with the goat dairy or something, it's like, oh, it's there. I just had a little on a gluten-free pizza. And then next week I'm like in it. So I'm just like, it's 100% with me with that too. Cause it's like, I've become, when you haven't had something for so long, you're like, oh my God, the taste of like real cheese and something melting, you know, oh my God. And then you're down a slippery slope. So right.
It's all hookers and cocaine after that. So yeah.
Just, you know, I found this goat cheese that was like it wasn't like the soft goat cheese. It was like in a bar, like a real cheese. So it could be grated and melted. And yeah, there was a period about a year ago that I was like every day. I was like, yeah, no more.
There was an intervention that happened in the Myers household.
Yeah. No more.
Oh, that's awesome. So where do you usually plug folks in when they come in the clinic? Like I'm really interested in what the triage process is. You do a really thorough intake. You're talking about their diet, their lifestyle, photo period. Could you give people kind of a big picture of what going to you in a clinical setting looks like? Because I suspect that really informs a lot of the way that the book was developed.
Yes. So first of all, I have another physician and a nurse practitioner who are fabulous. So everybody listening and calling and is like, I have to see her. She said on her podcast, on Rob's podcast, that this is what happens when you see her. The same thing happens when you see them and they get amazing results and people love them as well. So, you know, it's very different. It has certainly evolved over the years. You know, in the beginning, it was a lot of education and a lot of convincing and people coming in eating a lot of gluten and dairy. Now, having had a book out there and as many blogs and things that I've written for free online, people are really, we are seeing like some of the most complex people. I mean, they have been everywhere. And I mean, I wouldn't even think somebody could have 5, 6, 7 autoimmune diseases, but they do. And they're, you know, coming to see us. So it's pretty intense. And of course, everybody's like, oh, I've already read the book. I've already done all these things and I'm following your diet. You know, the easy days of just do this are gone.
Gone.
yeah, super gone, been gone a long time ago. So, you know, everybody fills out a 30 or so page intake form that each of us reads before you even come. And so we have a sense of what's going on, and they fill out a food diary as well. And of course, if there are any labs of anywhere you've been that you want us to take a look at, I mean, to some, you know, it's not like send us 10 years of records and we'll look at them beforehand. But, you know, we let you submit some recent results. And then if you want to bring your whole binder, which people do, we look at in the appointment. So really, it's 80 minutes of us just chatting, of us, you know, really trying to put those pieces together. We're going back and going through the whole history and seeing where things went awry so that we can try to triage, right? I mean, we have those 5 pieces of the pie. And typically with everybody, we're starting with diet and gut because those two things go hand in hand. And then from there, it's kind of like, okay, did I hear something in the history that made me think Lyme? Or did I hear something that made me think heavy metals? Or did I hear something that made me think toxic mold or infections? And so that's where, you know, a lot of the triage comes, because it is difficult to do all that stuff at one time. It's expensive. It's draining for everybody. It's, you know, a lot. So we really try to hone in from there, like, what's the next biggest piece of pie for you that we can begin to tackle? And so, you know, do lots of blood work, send off lots of functional medicine tests. And of course, if it's dealing with the thyroid, then we're checking that right away and looking to see if you are somebody who is already on supplemental thyroid hormone, if you're on the right dose and the right form. And we talk to you about that. And if you're somebody who's not already on it, if you're super, super overt, like hypothyroid or hyper, and somebody has just missed it, we of course intervene. And if you're kind of borderline, which is what a lot of people are, we of course follow the program that I outline in the book and see if we can get that to where you don't need to be on supplemental thyroid hormone.
Gotcha. When you do use supplemental thyroid, are you using Armour? Are you using Naturoid? What direction do you usually go with that?
I use whatever the person needs. So This is really a piece of advice for people, because everybody isn't going to be able to come see me, and you're going to work with whether it's a conventional practitioner or it's a functional or alternative practitioner. You want to interview them first. And if anybody is like, all I use is this, whether it's the nature, you know, the quote unquote natural stuff or the conventional stuff, you don't want somebody who's set in one camp or another. I've tried them all myself. I personally take, you know, Westerthroid Pure and Synthroid. So I really look at the person, I listen to the person, and I look at their labs, and we have a conversation. If somebody comes in on Synthroid and, you know, they're feeling really pretty good on it and their labs look good, I don't want to mess with a good thing. If somebody comes in on it and they feel terrible, well, we might change it, and vice versa. I mean, people do tend to do better when they have some amount of T3. And so that's typically in the form of an Armour or Westerthroid Pure, but not everybody. I mean, there are people, it's in a preformed concentration, and sometimes that is not the right concentration somebody needs. So they need to take a little bit of both, or they just, you know, people with really messed up adrenals can't tolerate the T3 at all. So we'll start them on a Synthroid or Tyrosent or something like that. The one thing I would say to listeners, though, is if you are on supplemental thyroid hormone, particularly when it comes to Synthroid and Lovoxyl, you do want to get the brand name. It is worth investing in that if your insurance doesn't cover brand names, because there are a lot of studies, and I have clinically seen it, where people were doing great and then unbeknownst to them, their insurance stopped covering the brand and they were getting generic, and, you know, they started having problems. So it is not as, the doses aren't as consistent with the generic. So that is the first place that I have people start.
Interesting. Yeah. So let's say someone has been diagnosed with either Hashimoto's or Graves in the past. They've figured out some sort of a medication regimen that they're motoring along. They feel pretty good. Is that the end of the story for them? Like you mentioned that a lot of these folks have potentially multiple autoimmune diseases. I think there's some pretty good literature that suggests that people with autoimmune thyroid conditions, either Graves or Hashimoto's, are at exceptionally higher risk for other autoimmune disease. But I think for a lot of people, if they feel like they've kind of buttoned that part up, then they're done. They don't need to look under the hood anymore. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously I feel very differently, which is why, you know, I branched out and did what I did and, you know, why I wrote this book. I mean, it's clear that the people who aren't on the right dose, you know, this book is of course going to help them, you know, get to the root and work with their doctor. And of course, this is for the book, you know, the book that for people who've been told, hey, I don't have, you know, thyroid dysfunction, when they actually probably do because of how conventional medicine really gets that wrong. But it's definitely for the person who's like, hey, I feel great on my thyroid meds. But they've never dealt with the underlying cause. Cause you're right. I mean, at least three times higher to get some other autoimmune disease. And I got a lot of flack about this when I kind of was like talking about in the autoimmune solution, like, hey, if you have a Hashimoto's, you know, it's kind of, you know, if you're going to have an autoimmune disease, it's like kind of the one to have, right? I mean, cause it's like, give you some supplemental thyroid hormone, and people got really upset and like, you know, I've had a terrible time. And it's like, I wasn't trying to make it sound like, everybody who has Hashimoto's has an easy breezy. Trust me. I mean, I've been through Graves and an ablation and that entire roller coaster, but you're lucky that it's not, you know, MS or, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or something, you know, polymyositis. I mean, something really, you know, debilitating that could literally lupus, you know, ultimately end your life. You know, I'm not pitting one against the other, but, you know, a lot of people do have that thought that you have. And that's really because conventional medicine feels like that's exactly what you do. You give them Synthroid and their problem's fixed. And that's the end of the day. The first step is you need to get your antibodies checked and see if it's autoimmune or not. Most thyroid is, so it probably is, but not necessarily. So if it's not autoimmune, I still would recommend that you read the book and, you know, figure out what some underlying dysfunction of how you got in that boat. But particularly if it's autoimmune, you really want to do that, because if you don't change your diet and you don't fix your gut and you don't find the underlying factors, you definitely could be opening yourself up to something far worse down the line.
Gotcha. So Amy, standard thyroid testing for most situations is appallingly inadequate. I see this on the lipidology side. Like, people will come in with a slice of blood work and they manage to take just enough to make things absolutely confusing and not nearly enough to answer any type of questions. What is it that usually is getting done? And then how are you handling that initial testing in a different way?
So what's typically getting done is a TSH is run, and a TSH is a thyroid stimulating hormone. It's really looking at the pituitary. There's this whole negative feedback loop of what happens in the brain to the thyroid and signaling it to produce more hormone. And so that's inadequate because it's not really telling you about the thyroid, but it's also inadequate because when they looked at the reference range or went to design the reference range, they realized later that they had actually included a bunch of people with thyroid dysfunction in that reference range. So many people are using a very outdated, antiquated reference range. I mean, even the Academy of Endocrinology has recommended that this reference range be narrower. And even so, we in functional medicine believe it needs to be even more narrow to be optimal. So that's, you know, kind of the one way in which conventional medicine fails people. Another way is that it's not checking what I believe are the other tests that need to be checked, which is a free T4, a free T3, a reverse T3, and then thyroid antibodies. So a free T3 is, you know, the free hormone is what goes into the cell and keeps us warm and gives us energy and keeps our mood even in level and our weight, you know, balance. And most doctors aren't even checking that. In fact, I was training my wellness coach today because I've partnered with a lab company so that when people go to their doctor, if their doctor's unwilling to run their labs, they can go online and order lab tests. I don't get anything out of you ordering labs from them. And, you know, the link or the website is in the book and on my website for that. But if they do want somebody to go over it with it, their doctor won't, my wellness coach can certainly do that on the phone and at least give you some guidance. So I was just going over a bunch of lab tests with her today of real patients that we see in our clinic. And there was the perfect example of somebody who had a TSH that was 1.8, which I consider optimal between 1 and 2. So that looked great. And then their free T4 was, I think, 1.4. And I like it above 1.1. So that looked great. So if they'd gone to their doctor with their TSH, you know, they would have not gone any further. if they'd even gone to a doctor and they were willing to do a free T4, they would have been like, yeah, thyroid is definitely not your problem. We got to her free T3 and it was 2. So normal is 2.3 up to like 3.6 or 4 in my lab. And optimal is around 3.2, you know, at least around 3.2. She was 2. So she was actually legitimately low on a lab range, which I don't see a lot with free T3, but it does happen. I more see people around the like 2.3, 2.4, 2.5, you know, that is on the low end of normal and what I would consider. So there was somebody who, if they'd gone to a conventional doctor, would have completely been missed for their thyroid dysfunction. And here it was like screaming, you know, it wasn't my patient. It was one of my other practitioner's patients. So I don't know the story and what the person was complaining of. But, you know, that was just a perfect example of how things can be, you know, missed if you're not checking a free T3.
Right, right. And we've seen quite a number of people in the clinic. And again, you know, like the clinic here in Reno, especially health, are very lipidology oriented. And they had a lot of people that, you know, had exceptionally high LDLP, a little bit of insulin resistance, but they had some pretty high, sky high LDLPs. And I'm not anywhere as good at this stuff as you are, but I started looking around and looked at the TSH, T3, T4, and I thought, man, it sure looks like there's something thyroid going on here and maybe adrenal going on. And so a number of people that have been doing some low dose statins, we pulled them back in, started addressing some adrenal and thyroid issues, and lo and behold, their LDLP would go from like 2,600 down to 800. You know, they were at like high risk for a cardiac event, and then they basically had no risk of cardiac event after that.
Yeah, so I forgot to mention that, you know, because I was more thinking signs when you asked me about hyper and hypothyroidism, mm-hmm. but certainly on labs, if you're hypothyroid, your cholesterol is going to go up. And if you're hyperthyroid, your cholesterol is going to go down. I mean, when I was hyperthyroid, you know, my cholesterol, which can be dangerous too, right. Was like, you know, I mean, it was under 100. I mean, it was like super low because I was just like burning through everything. So that's definitely, you know, something, and blood sugar issues as well. So, I mean, those are things. It's also, you know, one of those things, particularly when it comes to blood sugar, like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, is that low thyroid creating this, or is the blood sugar, you know, creating the stress? Is the stress creating the blood sugar, creating the thyroid to bind up estrogen, creating that to bind up the thyroid? I mean, it's this whole, you know, what came first, the chicken or egg? But definitely cholesterol is very related to the thyroid.
Right. Yeah. And we've definitely seen that in our clinic. And I think all of our docs are much better at screening for that at this point, and has helped a ton of people. So really, really excited to have that stuff becoming more generally known. So Doc, this is the week of your release. Your book is going to be released on the 27th.
Yeah. A week from tomorrow. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, we're talking on Monday night, whether you want to tell me about that or not. So a week from Tuesday,
okay,
the 27th.
The 27th. So what's going on with that? If folks want to check this out on a pre-release format, I know you guys have some special offers going on.
Yeah, we have tons. So first I want to say, and this will apply for when Rob's book comes out as well, you know, we want to hit the New York Times bestseller list, not only to say that we did, but when you do that, you know, it reaches more people. You get more press, your book gets, you know, put up more center in the bookstore, so it can just help more people. And obviously conventional medicine failed me, so it's my mission to not have it fail you too. It is genuinely my goal to reach as many people as possible. So, and the best time to potentially get on the New York Times bestseller list is that first week. So if you guys, you know, are willing and able to pre-order your book or to buy a book, that would be awesome. So pre-ordering, we have tons of gifts. We have tons of giveaways that are going on. I'm doing lots of Facebook Live, so people can tune in for those. But we have a $10 gift card to my online store, and then over $1,000 worth of free downloads of just companion stuff to the book that you'll get if you buy a book. And if you buy 5 or more, you automatically enter to win a all expense paid trip to come here to Austin, Texas, to hang out with me and 4 other people. 4 other people will also win the trip, and they'll get everything paid for when they're here. Hotel, flight, And we're going to hang out and just have a super cool day doing a lot of fun stuff that is all on the website. I won't get into it, but manicures and pedicures and makeup, you know, all natural stuff, people that I support and they support me. So,
And folks do the pre-purchase and then they go to your website to input the receipt.
Yeah. Thank you for specifying. So they can go to any online retailer, get, purchase their book 1, 2, 5, go back to my website. And, then they just put in their receipt number and their email and name, and then they will get emailed all of that stuff.
Great. And so it'll be, 4 other people and then me, because I guarantee you I'm going to win this thing.
I want that spot.
Yeah, I want to go hang out, but in part because I owe you a NorCal margarita because I screwed up our first podcast. So I need to buy like 100 copies of the book, one click at a time, so that we boost this thing to number one on the New York Times bestseller list to make up for my gaffe. So
hopefully you do have a copy of the book that should have been in the mail.
I do. It's fantastic. Like, I really loved your first book, and this one is equally amazing. It's I got to tell you, so I'm almost 20 years into this gig, and when I
you're too young.
Maybe I just started early, but, yeah. But when I first started doing this stuff, the idea that, your gut could influence autoimmunity and that you might be able to turn the ship around, that was crazy talk. And so it's just such an amazing time now that we have doctors like you that not only run amazing clinics to help people, but are producing books like this that literally can save folks' lives. And it's never easy to make change for certain circumstances, but man, the results are definitely worth it, particularly if you're quite sick.
The results are so worth it. And I mean, that's probably the message to impart on people, is that there is hope. You know, you don't have to be feeling bad. There's definitely hope. These things can be reversed. You can get your life back. And it's great when somebody comes and sees me, right? And you hope, obviously, that they're going to get well. They've flown here. Most people do. They've spent a lot of money. You know, I'm not that I don't appreciate those success stories, but the things that honestly, like, I've goosebumps, you know, that can like bring me to tears and make my day, are like somebody taking time to send me. I really like the letters. You know, these people send a letter and, you know, just tell me. I mean, I was having the worst day and just being down on myself. I had this toxic mold exposure and just, you know, feeling like, how am I going to recover from this in the midst of this book? And I get this letter from this gentleman who, you know, had like read my book and just like went through like everything in his life of how he literally was contemplating committing suicide. And now he was like symptom free. And it's just like, I literally was like brought to tears by the thing. And trust me, if you send me a letter, you will get a letter back. I mean, somebody who takes the time to send me a letter, I usually write them a letter back, and, you know, I send him a signed copy of the book and stuff. So, you know, that's always super. I love hearing those things. Just
that's
people
fantastic.
Who, you know, read the book and did the program and had amazing results. So
that's awesome. Well, Doc, where can people track you down on the interwebs?
AmyMyersMD.com, AmyMyersMD.com. And then of course, all my social media and everything is just AmyMyersMD as well.
Okay. And, we will have all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much for writing the book. Thank you for being willing to record a second podcast, because I screwed up the first one. I think this one was equally as good, possibly even better than the first one. The first one we were on a pretty good tear, and this one was good too. But thank you for doing that and being gracious.
I was happy. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Doc. Okay. Really looking forward to seeing you in real life again. Always see you at Paleo FX. Hopefully we'll see you before then.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Okay, Amy. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.